Hi, Steve Pomerantz here, host of On the Money with today's On the Money Extra, where we feature market updates and insights as well as guest interviews with noted financial experts to help you stay informed and learn the facts to make the right decisions about money. So let's get started. I'm very happy to have back on my show Jane Bryant Quinn. You all know her. She's a leading commentator on personal finance. She's also the author of numerous books and has written for a number of well-regarded publications. And her new book, which we're going to talk about today, is How to Make Your Money Last, The Indispensable Retirement Guide. And she's on the phone with me right now. Hi, Jane.
Hi, nice to talk to you.
I have to tell you, this is a great guide to all the pressing issues surrounding retirement. I read it from cover to cover, and I do highly recommend it. Let's begin talking about it. First of all, I want to tell you that the chapter on Social Security was very comprehensive and easy to understand. But first, and I like the fact that you started out this way, you write about the five emotional stages that people experience when they enter retirement. What are they?
They've been studied, actually, so there's a lot of background to this. And just as a preface to our talking, people often say, I'm planning my retirement, I'm making a financial plan, but they don't think about the fact that they have to make an emotional plan, too.
Mm-hmm.
If you just plunge into retirement and suddenly you're retired and you're free, but the question is free to do what? And this is where the emotional stages come along. And they found that people who plan ahead for what they're going to do after they retire actually do much better in the early years than people who don't. So we go from, of course, pre-retirement nerves, but when you retire and you're not going to the office anymore and all of a sudden you say, this is wonderful, I'm free, that's the honeymoon. But, of course, the question is free to do what?
Right.
And that can start raising some questions.
Well, first you're gradually disengaging from work and you start thinking about life ahead. And it's kind of an intellectual exercise, and I know the worry quotient rises at this point. And then finally, you sever it, you make the cut, and then you're finally free. And what you were calling that, the honeymoon period?
Now that's the honeymoon period, when you say, I can do anything I want, and I'm free, and I don't have to go to the office,
mm-hmm.
and I can wander around the house all day in my sneakers and my T-shirt, and I'm fine. And that's a good thing. That's the way you want to feel.
Mm-hmm.
You want to look forward to your day when you have more leisure. But then, after a time, the days may start looking pretty empty, and you may feel a loss of status. You know, you used to be a teacher or a lawyer or a journalist or whatever, and now you look in the mirror and you say, who am I?
Mm-hmm.
And you might start worrying about money because maybe it's going out the door faster than you thought.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have a grip on your life. All of a sudden, you don't have anything in particular you have to do, and that can get depressing after a while. So that is what they call then the third stage.
Yeah.
Then if you start getting involved with life, you have things to do, you volunteer, you find part-time work, you get engaged in something. You used to play the clarinet in high school, and now you're taking lessons again.
Mm-hmm.
When you find these kinds of things to do, that's the fourth stage, that's reorientation. And you get a more realistic view of retirement, you develop more interests, and you do a better job of figuring out the money. And then the fifth stage is finally stability.
Jane, this is a point in time now where you're doing the things that you really only want to do to a large degree. Not that you can do everything you want to do at all the times, but when you're working, you're making compromises and some sacrifices, but now you're on your own and you're carving out a life that is yours, so it can be quite exhilarating.
But you know, I think of it as a time, similar to a time when you get out of school, out of high school, out of college, and you're looking ahead and you don't know what's going to happen to you.
Mm-hmm.
It's that kind of surprising period.
Mm-hmm.
And then you, of course, you find out and you get married, you have a family, you have a job, whatever. Then when you retire, you are in a similar position. All of a sudden, you have graduated from your old life that you've been running for 40 or 50 years, and you're looking ahead and you're saying, now what's going to become of me? Because remember, our longevity, you know, at 60, 65, you're going to live 25, 30, 35 more years. What are you going to do with those? And it's the same kind of surprise you feel when you get out of school and look ahead and say, what am I going to become?
Well, you write about right-sizing your life, the right-sizing your life. What does that actually mean?
Right-sizing means getting a hold of your finances in a way that makes sense so that you can feel that you're going to have regular money coming in at a level that will support you, and you have fit your ambitions or your desires or your lifestyle to that level of income. When you're younger and working, you call it budgeting, but right-sizing is more than that. You have to project what your finances or what your income is likely to be in retirement. You have to look at then what your expenses are. You have to fit the two together. But there's an extra step that you have to do, and that is you have to project your living expenses, your budget, your income, if you're married, as if you're a couple and the two of you are going to live for quite a while. Then you have to project them a second time if, say, the husband dies first and the wife is on her own, and then the third time if the wife dies first and the husband is on his own. Because when you one of a couple dies, you're going to have less Social Security, one less Social Security check. If you have a pension that was a single life pension, your income might go down. So you have to look at it in three different ways to make sure you're okay, but also that you are okay after the first one of you dies.
You know, when someone first retires, the first question they ask is, well, where do I get my paycheck from? Been receiving a steady amount of income my entire life. All of a sudden, that's gone. I've got this portfolio. I've got some stream of income. Maybe I have a small pension or Social Security. So there's a source of monthly income. Where am I going to get the rest of my paycheck from? How do you advise people to tackle that issue?
This is where you are trying to figure out how much you can get out of your financial savings, by which I mean your stocks or mutual funds. I don't buy individual stocks. I'm a big believer in mutual funds, especially in retirement, because they're so much simpler to manage. So you have stocks, you have stock funds, you have bond funds, you have maybe some money in the bank, all these things if you've saved well. And how can you make that money last for 30 years? There is a lot of research on that subject. And the gold standard research said 4%. You can afford to take 4% out of your savings in the first year you retire or start drawing on them. And then in each subsequent year, you take that same amount of money plus an increment for inflation, which is a very good way, by the way. The 4% rule would have carried you through the Great Depression. Mm-hmm. It would have carried you through the great stagflation of the 70s and early 80s. Your money would have lasted for 30 years. But there is updated research saying that if you have a diversified portfolio, meaning you have small stock funds as well as large stock funds, you could start with 4.5%. If you are flexible with your spending so that you can cut back in a year the market is bad and go up in a better year, then perhaps you could do 5.5%. So there are recipes in how much you can afford to take out of savings and still have your money last. And so I've got these recipes basically in the book, and you can look at them and say, who am I? Where do I stand with this? And what's a safe withdrawal rate for me?
Right. And by the way, in the book, they're all listed there and they're quite interesting. The one area that you spend a lot of time on in the book are annuities, which is a very controversial topic, but I think that you handle it quite correctly. In what way can an annuity be beneficial? What type of annuity? And how would you decide whether it's right for you?
The annuities that I think can be very beneficial are called immediate pay annuities. They are very simple. You put up some money. An insurance company says, thank you very much. Based on this money, I am going to give you X dollars for the rest of your life, no matter how long you live, or for yourself and the beneficiary, say a spouse, no matter how long you live. And it's an immediate pay annuity, and I think they are a wonderful instrument in many ways. They are Not for people who have only Social Security and a small amount of savings, mm-hmm. because in that case, you need your savings for your flexibility. And obviously, they're not for people who are so rich that they don't have to worry about an extra guaranteed source of income. But if you're in the middle and you have some savings and you've right-sized your life, you think that following a 4.5 or 5.5% rule for withdrawing from the savings that you'll be okay, but you're not sure and you're worried about it. And this is the ideal person for this immediate pay annuity. If you are keeping part of your money in bond mutual fund, because that's part of the safety part of your investing, if you took that portion of money and you bought an immediate pay annuity, so you turned that into a current income, mm-hmm. you would get a higher income from that piece of money than you would if you left it in the bond fund itself. So that is a way of improving your income and while improving, you know, the safety for as you look out ahead. So that's the kind of annuity I like. But no, the thing they call deferred variable annuities with lifetime benefits, blah, 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 that cost you 3.5, 4% a year, I think those are widely sold by financial advisors. I don't like them, and I explain why in the book. Mm-hmm. But these immediate pay annuities, I think, are a very interesting thing to consider.
Yeah. So getting back to the kind of person that should consider them, if you have limited resources and you'll need money for emergencies, you really don't want to take your liquidity and put them into an immediate annuity because you are, in fact, handing over that money permanently to an insurance company in return for a set amount of monthly income. There are other factors too, which are inflation that you have to consider. Also, remember that, you know, it could work not in your favor if you were to die early. Then you give them all this money, but you haven't actually gotten it back. Some people, Jane, call that the sucker's bet.
I know, but I want to speak to those people. And again, I want to reiterate, if you have only Social Security and a small amount of savings, you should not buy an immediate pay annuity. Keep your savings liquid. It's for people who have more savings. They think they'll last for 30 years, but they're not sure, so they want to add something to a guarantee. So people say, okay, why should I do that? I'll give the insurance company, I don't know, $100,000, and then 5 years later, I die. So I've been a sucker. I gave them the money. I didn't live long enough to get it back or more so. I shouldn't do this in the first place. First, why did you do it? You did it in order to improve your current monthly income. And that is what it did. It did exactly what you wanted. If you die early, well, you know, you're dead. So I don't think you're worrying very much about being a sucker at that point. Mm-hmm. While you were alive, you had a larger monthly income. And that was the purpose of the annuity. So if you were afraid of being a sucker and saying, well, I'm not going to do it, you might be settling for a lower standard of living than you really have to. Mm-hmm. I would just like people to look at it in terms of what their goal is. And if your goal is to have a higher income, and it's still, you know, it's a fixed income, but it still is a higher income, an immediate annuity for a small amount of your money that would otherwise be in bond funds is a very good choice to consider. Now, you do have, as far as inflation is concerned, you have Social Security, which is, you know, a wonderful program and is inflation adjusted. And you should have a good portion of your money in a stock-owning index funds, sure. funds that follow the broad market mm-hmm. as a whole. Because when you're 55 or 60 or 65, you know, you are still a long-term investor. Mm-hmm. You're going to live 25 or 30 years. So you shouldn't be locking up all your money in CDs or bond funds or annuities or anything like that.
Big mistake that people make is they think as soon as they're retired, they're supposed to go to all so-called safe investments because for some reason they don't think that the volatility of the stock market is appropriate for them. But it couldn't be less true. You need the growth of those markets over the length of your life, your expected lifetime, to beat inflation and to keep your current income growing throughout the years. Getting a fixed investment's not going to do that. I'm speaking with Jane Bryan Quinn. The book is How to Make Your Money Last, The Indispensable Retirement Guide. You know, Jane, one quick thing, we have a couple minutes left, is Chapter 10, Home Sweet Income Producing Home. Home Sweet Income Producing Home. And you talk about an idea, some financial planners are using with reverse mortgages. Tell us about that.
Yes. There's a very smart idea that has come up with reverse mortgages that, again, if you're trying to enlarge your monthly income, you should consider. First, a reverse mortgage is a loan against the equity in your home, and you don't have to pay it back while you're still in your home. The interest in the loan builds up inside the loan, and then when you sell the house, whether you die, go to a nursing home, or just sell the house, then the bank collects on the loan, and if there's any equity left over, you get it or your heirs do. So here's the idea. The oldest you can be is 62 to take this reverse mortgage. So when you're 62, you take it, but you take it in the form of a credit line. And you don't borrow against the credit line except for the upfront costs, which are substantial. But otherwise, you leave the credit line alone. This is a magic credit line because it grows every year by the same rate of interest that is growing on your loan. So you have a rising credit line. If you leave it alone for 10 years, 12 years, you'll look and say, all of a sudden, you have much more borrowing power than you had before.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're running short of other money, you now have this increased borrowing power from this reverse mortgage that you can turn to. And you could also use it, you know, if the market goes down and your stock funds have gone down, you say, well, maybe I'm not going to take my 4% withdrawal this
mm-hmm.
year.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'll take something out of my home equity credit line instead. So basically, you have another pot of money you can draw from. It's a very interesting concept that I learned while I was writing this book. One thing is only for people who really, really, really expect to be in their homes for 15 or 20 years.
Sure.
Because you have to amortize those upfront costs, which are substantial.
Well, I'm a financial planner, and Jane, I didn't know about it either. So I learned something as well. To find out more about Jane and to hear this interview again, of course, join the conversation at onthemoneyradio.org. The book is How to Make Your Money Last, The Indispensable Retirement Guide. And the author with me is Jane Bryan Quinn. Jane, great to talk to you again. Thanks so much.
Always my pleasure. Call me again.
You're listening to On the Money with certified financial planner Steve Pomerantz. If you'd like information about guests, topics, or anything you hear on this program, call 866-MONEY01 or visit the show's website at onthemoneyradio.org.